closer and closer. Can you imagine what the players are feeling like in anticipation of this showdown in Tuscaloosa? The Raging Cajuns are trying to keep their streak alive as they hit the road to go to Conway, South Carolina. We'll have a preview. We'll go in the trenches to find out the keys for the Tigers to snap an 8-game losing streak with the Crimson Tide. The Saints trying to win 7 in a row and send the Dirty Birds to their 7th loss in a row. And Michael Hugonen with all the picks of the big games, including the biggest game of them all. Today, Wednesday, November the 6th, 2019.
Outside shooter, 6'11 guy, but comfortable on the perimeter. Goes inside for the lob. Another good outlet by McCormick, and laying it in at the other end is Abaji, and it's a 13-0 run.
LeBron with 7 on the clock dribbles it right to the front. AD for 3. Good! And that should do it. Anthony Davis buries a 3 in his hometown. The score in the fourth quarter is Lakers 32 and Chicago 6.
Oh, good afternoon. Lots of hoops going on and lots of football as well. It's great to be with you. LeBron with his third consecutive triple-double. Keep telling you, he wants that MVP award. He said, washed-up king? No. You know, all the chatter about, well, this guy's the best player in the world, and that guy, is it Kawhi? Is it Kevin Durant? And there's LeBron just sitting back going, I'm going to show you. He and AD, they've got one of the best records in the league now at 6-1. They beat the Chicago Bulls, and college basketball got underway. Two really good ones at Madison Square Garden. Kansas put on a late run, but not enough to beat Duke. Duke wins it by 2, and the Kentucky Wildcats upset number 1-ranked Michigan State behind a freshman by the name of Maxey, who had 26 points. And Tom Izzo said it best. When, you know, we go and recruit the same kind of players as John Calipari, he gets some, we get some. Tonight, I started my freshman. He didn't start his freshman. Freshman came off the bench and got 26. Kentucky's good, as they always are. So a busy night of college hoops, NBA hoops, and, boy, we're closely approaching. We've got all three of our teams in action, one on Thursday as the Raging Cajuns of Billy Napier try to get to 7-2 to do so. They've got to avenge last season's nail-biter of a loss to Coastal Carolina. Joe Cashion is the play-by-play voice of the Chanticleers. He'll be joining us at around 2:15. Chris Truax, the former LSU offensive lineman, college offensive line coach, will join us around 2:30. We'll have our hot topics to start off hour number two, as per the norm, with CD joining us. John Hendricks will give us a preview of the Saints versus the Falcons. And then Michael Hugonen will talk about the big games in college football. Minnesota hosting Penn State. There's a huge one in the Big Ten with Iowa and Wisconsin. And then, of course, Tuscaloosa, without question, without doubt. Starting with LSU news, noticeable presence at practice yesterday was Louisiana Governor John Bel Edwards. He and Coach O are good friends. It wasn't the first time Edwards has attended an LSU practice or an event. So we've got the governor coming to practice. We've got the president going to the game in Tuscaloosa to see and to be seen. Yes, indeed. One noticeable absence, and it's been absent all week long during the media viewing, All-American safety Grant Delpit. Once again, not seen during the media viewing portion of practice. But as Coach Ed Orgeron said Monday, he summed up his thoughts on Grant Delpit when he said this to the media.
Grant has a slight injury. We do believe that he's going to practice a little bit today, practice a little bit tomorrow, and will be totally healthy for the game Saturday.
That's good news. Joe Burrow addressed the media. And look, he's been in this game before. He saw what happened a year ago with the lead-up, the build-up, and it was a 29-zip blowout by the Crimson Tide. Burrow said, we're going to approach everything the same way for this one.
I mean, you obviously have the bye week, so you worked on him a little bit last week. But you try to approach it like any other game. Obviously, it's not. But you do the same routine you do every week. You watch film the same way. You approach practice the same way. And obviously, with the bye week before, you have an extra week to prepare.
Joe Burrow feels confident. They've done it against Florida. They've done it against Auburn. They've been challenged many times this season.
You know, you always embrace challenges, but we've been challenged many times this year. We went on the road, really good Texas team, played Florida, Auburn. So we've been challenged, and I think that's going to help us a lot this week. Facing the adversity we've had this year and then last year, having a lot of guys coming back, I think it's going to really help us.
Joe, is there a mental hurdle? Does Alabama have LSU beat mentally heading into this game?
I wouldn't say there's a mental hurdle. I think, you know, we're really confident in our abilities, and we're really confident in our coaching staff and our scheme as well. And we know the kind of offense we are. So they, you know, we got to go out and face them, but they got to come out and face us too.
Way to go. And finally, Joe Burrow talking about POTUS in T-Town.
You know, regardless of your political views, that's pretty cool having the president at the game. Doesn't matter whether you're a Democrat or Republican. President at the game is pretty cool.
It is pretty cool. One of the leaders of the Alabama Crimson Tide receiving corps is Jerry Jeudy. You'll see him. He's number four. Jerry Jeudy was asked at his media availability, what has he seen so far from his quarterback, Tua Tagovailoa?
He looked pretty good, you know. He came out there, you know, he'd been doing his rehab. He looked good. He looked comfortable. And we're going to see how it goes day by day.
See how it goes day by day. So, Jerry, what does this game mean to you?
It means a lot. You know, LSU is like a big game. Every year we play them. Fun competition. You know, they number one, we're number two. So it's going to be a really exciting game.
No question about it. 2:30 kickoff, Bryant-Denny Stadium. Of course, the game right here on 103.7 The Game. Pregame show starting at 12:30. So that's Saturday. On Sunday, the New Orleans Saints get back into action. 7-1 overall. A great first half of the season. They had a great bye week. So Teron Armstead, man, big dude, how'd you spend your bye week?
Just relax, chill with the kids. My twins had their 7th birthday on the 30th, so had a little party for them, movies, all that good stuff.
All right. Says can't pay attention to the Falcons' record. They're 1-7, losers of 6 straight. Cam Jordan summed up the key defensively. They got to make Atlanta a one-dimensional squad.
We got a strong receiving core coming in. I know Mo Sanu went over to the Pats. So you got Calvin Ridley and Julio Jones. You've got Matt Ryan, who's putting up amazing numbers this year. You know, Devontae Freeman is healthy, and that makes them dangerous by far. Plus, it's an in-season rivalry game, and, you know, all of our rivalry games, all of our NFC South games are a battle. You play somebody twice a year, you know them year in, year out, what they're going to bring to the table. So it's going to be on us to try and make them one-dimensional if possible.
On the Raging Cajun front, Thursday night, 6:30, the Cajuns take on Coastal Carolina in Conway, South Carolina. Billy Napier talked about the challenge this week versus Coastal.
This is going to be one of the more unique challenges, and in my opinion, one of the biggest challenges of the entire season. You know, I think that this team has created some momentum, certainly a big win for them last week. The uniqueness of what they do in all three phases and some of the explosive players that they have. So we've got to travel on a 5-day break, which I think is unique and something that, you know, is going to be a challenge for our staff and players. So we're off and running here. You know, we're on to Coastal. It was a quick turnaround. We didn't spend much time on the game, previous game, and turn that page pretty quickly.
Turn the page quickly. Bob Marlin will turn the page quickly after his Raging Cajuns had their opening night debut with a 95-67 win over at Loyola Wolfpack. Jalen Johnson made his long-awaited debut with the Raging Cajuns basketball team, scoring a game-high 22 points, grabbing 9 rebounds. The transfer, who sat out last season after transferring from St. Louis University, finished 7 of 12 from the floor, 3 of 5 from downtown, and he said it's great to be back on the court again.
Well, it felt great to get back on the college basketball court, honestly. It's been a while. And I felt it, too, out there. I was like, man, Jalen, you're finally back on the court. You're back at home. It feels great. I got a great group of guys around me. It felt good to be out there.
Felt good, and it also felt good from a coaching perspective. You out-rebound a team 51-28. That's a dominating performance on the glass, and the Raging Cajuns get it done. Their second game is this Saturday night. LSU's men's basketball team tips off Friday night against Bowling Green. The LSU Lady Tigers won last night in their opening game, so we're right in the throes of everything. So, with that in mind, we want to give some stuff away. You know, we always want to do that because we are the station that loves to give things away, and we want to give you the opportunity to go see a great show, and that's Cirque du Soleil OVO, a family show based on the world of insects, bustling with action and full of fun and color. 103.7 The Game is your chance to win a pair of tickets to this amazing show coming to the Cajun Dome March 25th to the 29th. Just text Cirque to 68683 for your chance to win a pair of tickets to this amazing show. Once again, text Cirque, C-I-R-Q-U-E, to 68683 for your chance to win tickets. Brought to you by 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. Preview of the Cajuns and the Chanticleers. We'll head to Conway, South Carolina next. The play-by-play voice of the Chanticleers, Joe Cashin. Next up on the Wednesday edition of the Jordy Helpert Show.
Taking the hottest topics out there and dousing them in gasoline. It's the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
Well, tomorrow, Thursday, November 7th at 6:30 our time, 7:30 p.m. Conway, South Carolina time, the Raging Cajuns at 6-2 will have a Sun Belt Conference matchup with the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, who are 4-4 overall, 1-3 in the Sun Belt. They'll meet at 20,000-seat Brooks Stadium, and the man who will paint the picture for the Chanticleer fans joins us now, Joe Cashin, the play-by-play voice of Coastal Carolina, kind enough to join us on this the eve of the ball game to kind of give us an inside look into the Chanticleer football program. Joe, thanks for the time, my friend. How are things up there in lovely Conway?
Well, Jordy, thanks for having me on. They are lovely right now, quite frankly. You're near the beach. We like it. We're having some good weather. Temperatures mid-60s. Got some nice sunny weather, and we're feeling pretty good after what happened last Saturday. So the Chanticleers are ready for the Raging Cajuns, I hope.
I was going to say a 36-35 nail-biter over Troy. That was tell me about that game, man. That's amazing.
It was pretty wild, Jordy, to be honest with you. The game started off like a house on fire. We thought the game would be in the 70s or 80s, quite frankly, with the way the first quarter was going. You know, they scored 21, we scored 14. It was going back and forth. They scored really quickly, but then we would come back and match that, and I thought that was key for us to be able to hang around in that game. I kind of felt like at some point the game would kind of slow down, it would calm down, because you just don't think that, you know, offenses are going to be able to keep that kind of pace up. And things did slow down in the second quarter. We got a couple of stops, had a long, sustained drive where we got a field goal and had a four-point game at halftime. That was the only scoring in the second quarter. And then we come out in the second half and we get a couple more stops, get another field goal and then a touchdown to take the lead. And I'm thinking, you know, at this point, we've got control of the game because we've really kind of shut them down for a while. And
right.
Of course, then they get cranked back up again, and it all goes down to the wire. You know, they had a chance, really, with a 7-point lead with a little over 3 minutes to go to put, you know, put ice on it. But, you know, I thought they got a little conservative there. They ran the ball a couple of times. We were able to stop them and get the ball back with 2 minutes left, down seven. And after that, we, you know, had a nice 71-yard drive, worked the clock, worked the field, got down there and put ourselves in position with 30 seconds left, scored it. And there was no way a kicker was going to come out there at that point. Yeah. I knew it. I mean, I knew there was no way we're going to send a kicker out there. We're going to go for two, win or lose. And we went for two and we won, and it was just it was a fantastic finish.
That's amazing, amazing. Joe Cashion, kind enough to join us. I guess two quarterbacks are better than one. Tell me about this two quarterback system y'all use.
We used the two quarterbacks up until about two games ago when our starter, who had been the guy pretty much, who'd gotten the majority of the snaps, Fred Payton, he got hurt in the Georgia State game back on October the 5th. And after that game, he's been out the last two. He missed Georgia Southern, and then he didn't play at all again against Troy this past Saturday. So it's been Bryce Carpenter, really his show, another sophomore. Both these guys, true sophomores. They've been splitting some time, but like I said, Payton was getting the majority of the snaps. But you know, Carpenter's come on and done a really good job. We really like him a lot. He's thrown seven touchdown passes, has not thrown the ball away yet. Completing 65% of his throws. He's second in the conference in passing efficiency right now, and he can run it too. I mean, he's got good wheels about him, and you know, nothing really seems to rattle him. He got hit hard late on that last drive, but he popped right back up off the ground, and next thing you know, he hits an 18-yard pass to get his first and goal. So right now it's Bryce Carpenter. Sure. I'm not sure that you'll see Payton tomorrow night. It just depends on, you know, where he is with his, you know, progression from coming back from injury, whether he can throw the ball effectively. You know, our coach said earlier this week that we hope to, you know, have him not in an emergency situation. But you know, right now it's Bryce Carpenter, so we'll see.
It looks like he's got a favorite go-to receiver. Had 12 catches for a buck seven last week.
Javon Hiley. That's right. And these guys were high school teammates down in Florida.
Okay.
Yep, Javon Hiley. And so they really know each other really, really well. I mean, they played with each other for a long time on the same team, like I said, down in Venice, and recruited them both. They came here at the same time, and they just – you watch them out there, and it really looks like they have a chemistry about them. You know, the first time that they ever stepped on the field was our first game last year at South Carolina. Both those guys are true freshmen, and, you know, Carpenter hit Hiley with a touchdown pass, and it kind of looked like we looked at each other like they've run that play before. You know, so they've got a little bit of chemistry. They know each other. You know, Javon knows where to go. Bryce knows when and where to deliver the ball. And, you know, Javon set the single game school record, most catches in one game with those 12 receptions the other day against Troy. He's got really good hand. Like him a lot.
Not only did you have a great game against Troy, but go back a year ago when you went to Lafayette to take on the Raging Cajuns. That was a heck of a game. You came out the first time these two teams had ever met, and you steal one on the road 30-28. What do you remember the most about that one?
Well, I remember that we were in the middle of running around from a hurricane last September, and we'd gotten displaced, and Lawrence put the team on the road, and we had to come to Louisiana from Jacksonville, Florida, which is where the team had to leave after we went and played a game on the road that we were supposed to have at home, and then you know, our guys were able to put it together. That was a great football game. We got off to a good start in that game. Louisiana came back at, you know, I thought we were going to be in trouble. We lost our starting quarterback that night. Kilton Anderson got loose on a run early in the third quarter, almost scored. They got, you know, chased down from behind, kind of went down awkwardly, and he was never the same the rest of the year. So Bryce had to step in, and he played, and we ran a flea flicker in that game where we scored. And then late in the game, we had a chance to, you know, ice the clock, but Louisiana had us behind the chains. We fumbled the ball, but there was Javon Hiley to scoop it up and run for a first down, and that basically sealed the game. You know, it was a heck of a good football game, and you could tell that, you know, I could tell that Louisiana was on the right track with Billy Napier and the things that he wanted to do. And he had a lot of talent, and you really kind of see it as I'm watching it, and I've seen this team a couple of times this year. You really see that talent coming to fruition and all the good things they're doing now.
What is it that the Chanticleers do well? What do they do the best? And when they do this, you feel up in the booth very comfortable and confident that they're going to come out on top because of that.
When we run the ball effectively, we're really good. Okay, when we run it well, that just seems to open up everything. And we kind of got the ground game back going again last week when we got a true freshman running back by the name of Reese White back in the game. Our best back is C.J. Marable. When he's on his game, when we're making, creating some space out there, he is really, really good. And I feel good about our chances because then that obviously opens up the pass for us. So when we run the ball effectively, we're awfully hard to beat. Now, when teams stop us, this is old school football. I mean, this is not like we're splitting the atom. That's how you play football. You run it to set everything else up. And when we do those things well, we play well. Defensively, when we can get some stops, and we've done a much better job this year on defense, I think, even though we've got guys banged up over there. When we get some stops, we give our offense the chance to do some really nice things. So, it's about running the ball and getting a stop when you need to.
Now, when they run it, C.J. Marable is the guy. And to your point, there's a stat in your game notes. The rushing attack has been the key. Carolina has rushed for over 170 yards in each of its four wins this season. So 170 seems to be it. It seems to me whichever team does what they do best, whoever runs the ball the best, is the team that's going to win this thing.
Oh, I think so. And you look at that Louisiana rushing attack. It's one of the best, not just in the Sun Belt, but in the country. You talk about the third best in FBS, 288. You got three different guys. I mean, who are you going to stop out there? Mitchell, Trey Regis or Kale? I mean, who are you going to try to slow down out there? Those guys are very, very impressive. And hopefully our defense can slow those guys down enough to hopefully get a stop or two along the way and get ahead of schedule. But, I think who wins the running battle tomorrow night, you can probably chalk those guys up.
All right. Well, Joe will be on the call of the game for Coastal. We greatly appreciate your time. I hope the weather stays fabulous and catch some sun on the beach for me. I am infinitely jealous of your position right here, right now. So, Joe, thank you, my friend. Thank you.
Hey, thanks so much, Jordy. And if you want to come to the beach, we got a place for you. You're more than welcome.
I'm going to take you up on that. I got your number, big guy. Thank you. All right, there's the preview of the Raging Cajuns, Coastal Carolina. Both teams like to run it. Whoever runs the ball best, does what they do best, is the team that's going to win this thing. We'll take a quick timeout. He said, vote to old-fashioned football. That's not what's happening in Tuscaloosa. They set up the run by passing it. And both teams want to pass it early and often. So we'll go in the trenches with Chris Truax next here on the Jordy Helpert Show.
There's only one place you'll find all the movers, shakers, and Tigers newsmakers. And it's right here on the Jordy Helpert Show on 103.7 The Game.
And there's only one place to spend your RV getaway. That's True Lodging RV Park, the perfect RV park located in southwest Louisiana in Hackberry, Louisiana, catering to all Louisiana natural gas lodgers, world-class fishing, hunting, and bird watching. They've got all the amenities, all the comforts, plus high-speed Wi-Fi. We got you covered at True Lodging RV Park. So many times we talked about the Florida game, the Auburn game. You got to win it at the line of scrimmage. Nobody's talking about that this week. All they're talking about is quarterbacks and wide receivers. But I got a sneaky feeling you better control that line of scrimmage. Nobody knows that better than the former LSU offensive lineman who did a great job coaching college linemen throughout the day. And that is our good friend Chris Truax. The legendary Mr. Chris Truax. CT, how are you, sir?
I'm good, my friend. How's your Wednesday going, man?
I'm ready for this game to get here. I don't know what else I can say, what else I can talk about. Take me inside that locker room. How are the players feeling about right now?
Well, obviously LSU's feeling pretty good because they keep shooting their mouths off. So I hope they can back up what they're preaching over there. And you know, you got two evenly matched ball teams, and I really hope Tua will get his best shot, because I don't want any excuses when LSU goes in there and handles their business on Saturday.
I'm with you. Line of scrimmage is always important. Nobody's talking about Alabama. They're not the same defense, but they're not that bad. And LSU maybe not be the same defense, but they're not that bad. I think both defenses are getting better. What challenges does the offensive line have in front of them against Alabama's defense this weekend?
Well, I mean, here I think we might have the edge this year, Jordy, because you know, over the past 8 years, you know, obviously we hadn't won. Secondly, it's been the same type of personnel grouping and offensive mindset under Coach Miles that was attacking the Nick Saban defense, where we want to run the football and Nick's going to stop the run. You know, what we're doing now on offense, Alabama doesn't like that style of offense. They don't like that up-tempo, no huddle. They've got that pro mentality that they like to rotate their defensive linemen, say their first and second down run stoppers. On third down, they want to bring in their specials, pass rushers, and so forth. Maybe go from 5 DBs to 6 DBs. So we're not allowing teams to do that and maybe utilize their personnel, because our offense is doing what they want to do out of the same personnel groupings. So I think that advantage comes to us. Jordy,
that's a great point. Go ahead.
We got to be smart about around the simple things, and let's not beat ourselves. You know, let's not get the stupid, you know, immature penalties in a ball game like this, and let penalties beat us like it almost did against Auburn. I think we had 12 against Auburn. You know, when we get in the red zone, we got to score. You know, if we're going to go on fourth down conversions in the red zone, then we've got to convert. And obviously, I think if you turn the ball over two times versus Alabama, you're not going to have the opportunity to win the game. So obviously, ball security is number one.
Alabama's won 48 of their last 49 in Bryant-Denny Stadium. The last time that got beat was by Ole Miss, which ran an up-tempo type of offense, much to your point. But I think you touched on something I believe is the key to the game. I think both of these teams are going to move the ball. Then you get to that red zone, and that field shrinks a little bit. What do you do when you're in the red zone? We've seen LSU at times be unstoppable, touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. Auburn made it a little bit more interesting. We had to kick some field goals. Whoever has the most success in the red zone, to me, is the team that's going to win. There's too many explosive players to shut them down. But can you contain them in the red zone, give up 3 rather than 7?
Well, you know, obviously you make them go a long field, meaning, you know, even if we kick the ball off, you do what we do, kick out of the back of the end zone, it's hard to go 75 yards against any defense, much less LSU defense, and put one in the end zone. And when they do get a short field and we're in the red zone, they're in the 20 to the goal line right there, that you maybe throw something different to you. You know, because watching Alabama play, there hadn't been a lot of people that affect their quarterback play, and they're number one. You know, they've got two first-round pick wide receivers that they love the slant. Well, but I really hadn't seen a bunch of people zone pressuring, meaning dropping D linemen into a curl area or the safeties having help. They're getting beat in a lot of one-on-one situations. So we just might see some more zone coverage this week than we've seen in, you know, LSU in the past. But I think, you know, Coach Aranda and his staff will really have a great game plan going into, you know, their wide receivers for Alabama are beating you more than their running game this year. So, I mean, obviously we pride ourselves on being DBU. Well, you know, it's going to have to shine again this year. And when, you know, you do kick a field goal, heck, you got to make them. I mean, everything is big in this moment. But I believe, too, the last time LSU won in this moment in Bryant-Denny was back when we were 1 and they were 2, or they were 1 and we were 2. Whatever that matchup was, I think that the last time LSU won, Jordy, in their stadium?
Yeah, that's it. 9-6,
so.
All field goals. Overtime field goal won it. I think LSU has an advantage in the kicking game. You're right, but it's they throw the slants, but what makes Alabama so good and what's going to be so important for LSU which they have improved on, but it was a sore spot early in the season, is tackling. You can't let them get those yards after the catch where a six-yarder becomes a 76-yarder, and Alabama's done that often, but they haven't played anybody yet, Chris. I mean, they haven't played anybody.
Well, they haven't played anybody, but yet they're still number three in the country. Alabama three on a weak schedule. So they've got respect. Nick Saban has great respect. He's been, you know, obviously one of the all-time greatest ever do the college game. But and then playing there and, you know, kind of the house rules. When you play Alabama, you know, sometimes they're not very forgiving over there. But LSU can play loose. I mean, they've got a mature football team. And I think you've got a quarterback, too, that those players on the offensive line know that, you know, Burrow's going to get them in the right play. You know, he's going to have the right check with me at the line of scrimmage. And he has, you know, as a whole, obviously, I think he's got four turnovers on the year. So that's not his deal. He protects the ball when he takes off and runs, and he makes, you know, really good calculated throws.
He's seen a little bit of everything. He saw the pressure that Florida sent his way. He saw Auburn drop everybody back to protect against the pass. I don't know what Alabama's going to do. I'm very, very curious. You mentioned it. This is an earn your money game for Dave Aranda. What kind of scheme does he come up with to offset an offense that's very similar to what LSU does offensively?
You know, Jordy, I really believe we're going to see a lot more zone pressure defense from our defense that we've seen all year, meaning they're going to bring second-level defenders and drop first-level defenders in those second-level boxes type deal. Especially to the short side of the field, or wherever to the Judy side, wherever he is, I think they're going to, you know, probably square up our cornerbacks man-to-man, maybe bring a safety or a linebacker to that side, but also drop a defensive lineman to replace where that pressure's coming from. I really think that's going to be a big part of our game plan because, you know, Alabama, they, regardless of whoever they're playing, they don't make a lot of mistakes, but their Achilles heel,
that's right,
and for whatever reason, is their kicking game as well, you know? And if Tua doesn't play the whole game, you know, their backup kid is a good operator too, and he manages the game as good as anybody, you know?
Yeah. Alabama doesn't recruit bad players, so I'm with you 100%. Chris Truax joining us, brought to you by True Lodging RV Park in Hackberry, Louisiana. It's a great place to get away, relax, get into nature. It's just really the best. When you need a break, True Lodging is the perfect RV park. So when you break this thing down, you know, what are your keys? What are you going to be looking for LSU to be successful?
Here are my keys to the game. First, no turnovers. Secondly, let's win the kicking battle. Okay, and thirdly, don't beat ourselves with penalties. So if we don't turn the ball over, we win the kicking game, and we don't commit a bunch of unnecessary penalties, we're going to win the football game. I truly believe that those three core fundamentals right there we just don't self implode.
What do you remember about your days playing against Alabama?
Well, let's see. We were 1-3. We beat them over there in Tuscaloosa 19-18. The same year, heck, we beat Auburn 7-6. You know, won the SEC championship.
Yep.
I remember Keith McCants, inside All-American, great NFL player for Alabama. You know, I think he hit me in the head two or three times. And coming back to that huddle, I was a little groggy at times. But they were a lot like that. The LSU-Alabama mentality is the same. It's a physical matchup. Those kids get recruited by LSU that play at Bama. The Bama kids get recruited by LSU. You know, vice versa. There's going to be a lot of camaraderie on that field. Those kids know each other, and they respect them. Their respect is there. But at the same time, you know, Jordy, it's been 2 years since we scored on these guys, trying to ram it down their throat, trying to do what they do best. So that's why I really like this tempo and this style of offense that LSU brings to the table.
I've said this all week long, and I'll say it again. This has been a big change for Nick Saban. I mean, he used to be cut and paste, because he knew exactly what Les Miles, as you said earlier, was going to do. Nick's had to spend a lot of time looking at film before this one, because he's never seen an LSU football team like this before.
Right. Even when Nick coached at LSU, he was basically a Nick Saban philosophy, you know, a run the ball, play action. I mean, you know, that was his mind. I mean, even Nick is 21st century football now, and he's four wide, one back, quarterback in the gun, slinging it around. But once again, his teams are always based on defense, and I think the strength of the Alabama defense under Coach Saban is, you know, their defensive linemen this year. Are they as good as Auburn? No, I don't. I think Auburn's the best defensive line in the SEC. So we've already competed against the best defensive line in the SEC.
Yeah. Yeah, I do know this. I know Nick, and you know Nick very, very well. He's going to disguise things. He's going to send pressure to try. His big line has always been, we don't have to sack the quarterback. We have to affect the quarterback. So he's going to send people here, from there. They're going to change things up. But Burrow's seen a whole bunch, and he's cool hand Burrow, man. Nothing much rattles him. So finally, for one, LSU has a guy that we all believe in can take us to the promised land.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's got a great presence in that pocket. He's laser focused with his eyes down the field. He gets a lot of stuff pre-snap read. You know, we kind of hurry up to the line of scrimmage, Jordy, and, you know, they're calling a player a snap 10, and boom, they don't snap it. They look at the sideline to create a new play versus a certain look or certain coverage. But, you know, Joe's got tremendous weapons as well, too, and our wide receivers. I mean, anybody in the country would love to have our group of wide receivers. And, you know, my hat is off to our running back, L.A. I mean, I wasn't a huge Hilaire fan to start the season, but he has proven himself to be a durable, good, physical running back.
Yep. Yeah, catches the ball out of the backfield, makes you miss, and then runs with power, low to the ground, hard to bring down. So, yeah, nobody's talking about the running game either, and I can't believe we're talking LSU and Alabama, and we're not talking about a running game, but Najee Harris is pretty good for them. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, pretty good for us. Maybe the team that runs the ball. Who knows, right? That's what we got to Man, can we get to the game, please?
Hey, Jordy, either way, and mark this down – it's going to come down to four or five plays. All the big games always come down to four or five plays. And so, once again, you know, what I'm harping on is ball security. You know, don't lose the game, personal fouls. Don't punch the opponent in the face on the sideline. You know, stupid, immature mistakes. And winning that kicking game. And big ball games and that kicking, that's going to be a great – I think we've got the edge on that. It might come down to that game because these are usually low-scoring affairs. But, hell, we might have a 35-point ball game. You never know.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's going to be in the 30s. I really, really do. Well, folks, I got to tell you, I saw Chris Truex over the weekend. We both went to a wedding of some near and dear friends of ours. And I'm going to tell you what. He made that sport coat look really, really good. You were dapper, man. You were sharp as a tack.
You're very kind. I thought you told me I was sharp as a donut.
Yeah. No, man, I wouldn't do that to you. Wouldn't do that to you. But, CT, thank you so much for your time.
Pleasure.
Enjoy the ball game, man, and thanks for your insight.
You too. Go Tigers.
All right, buddy. Bye-bye. You take care. That brought to you by True Lodging RV Park. Get away from it all at True Lodging in Hackberry, Louisiana. It is some kind of relaxing, some kind of comfortable, some kind of nice. And don't forget our Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge. If you love the combination of the NFL and Twin Peaks, and who doesn't, then go to 1037thegame.com. Take your part in the Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge every single week. You get a new chance of scoring Twin Peak gift cards by picking the correct winners for that week's exciting NFL action. It's simple, it's fun, it's free to play. The Twin Peaks Pro Pick'em Challenge, brought to you by 1037 The Game. We're back to wrap up hour number one next. All right, welcome back. ShopRite Tobacco Plus discount outlets, 60 of them. Man, they've got everything you need under the sun. So get over there and check it out. It's the best. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, you can't shop right at all. You'll find everything under the sun there. The first college football playoff ranking of the season debuted last night. Ohio State number one, LSU number two, Alabama number three, Penn State at number four, and the defending national champion Clemson on the outside looking in. It just really doesn't matter in any way, shape, or form what this is right here, right now. For instance, after this weekend, somebody's going to be out of there. The loser of the LSU-Alabama game is going to be out. What if Minnesota beats Penn State? You know, you just never know. So this thing will all play out. It's very nice. It just adds more to the aura of the game. It's a game for leadership in the SEC West, which gives you the leg up on the opportunity to get to Atlanta to play in the SEC championship game. It certainly helps you. The winner of this game is going to be number one. If LSU wins, they're going to be the number one ranked team in the college football playoff rankings next week. All right? You've got two quarterbacks that are Heisman Trophy front runners. Burrow with the nod now. If Burrow does what he does and LSU wins, you can just get it ready because he's going to get the trophy in New York City. And now you've got two versus three in the college football playoff rankings. So it just, look, all that was a glorified TV show that to help promote the game of college football. It's like the selection show for March Madness. That's all it was. It doesn't mean anything right here, right now. It doesn't guarantee that any of those teams are going to be in it on the final say, but it is what it is. And the passing numbers, our buddy Brooks Cabina did a look at the group of wide receivers from LSU: Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Terrence Marshall Jr. Alabama's Devontae Smith, Louisiana native, Jerry Jeudy, and Henry Ruggs III. LSU's trio has caught 120 passes. Alabama's 121. LSU's for 1,901 yard. Alabama 15 yards more. Both trios are averaging 15.8 yards per catch. That's ridiculous. And LSU with a two-touchdown advantage, 25-23. Six players that are going to play in the NFL, all wide receivers, all in the same game. Two quarterbacks that are going to play in the NFL and going to be first-round draft picks. We've never said that before about an LSU-Alabama game. Terrific trios, high-powered offenses. What can they do in the red zone? To me, that's the key. I think they'll both move the ball from 20 to 20. I think they're too skilled and too good. When that field shrinks, what happens? We'll have our predictions later on in the week. Hour number two coming up, Hot Topics. John Hendricks will talk about the Saints versus the Atlanta Falcons. I know it's a cliche. I know that, but I got to say it anyway. Forget about the records. Forget about it. Forget that the Saints are 7-1 and the Falcons are 1-7. This game, like the SEC, just means more. They hate each other. The fan bases hate each other. It's the best rivalry in the NFL, in my eye. So John Hendricks will join us for that. And then Michael Hugenin of The Athletic. Some big games. Penn State at Minnesota. Baylor tries to remain undefeated. Is Georgia going to have a hangover after they went over Florida? They got Missouri. Wisconsin is in the mix still against Iowa. How does Oklahoma respond after they lost to Kansas State and had a bye week? So a lot yet to be determined. We'll talk about it all with Michael Hugenin in hour number two. This one's history. We can't change it. All we can do is try and get hour number two even better. And that's straight ahead here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game. This is The Jordy Helpert Show.
Live from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
Tigers pull off another miracle.
This is Acadiana Sports Station, 1037 The Game.
Touchdown, New Orleans!
Streaming live on the 1037 The Game mobile app and online at 1037thegame.com.
He struck him out, and the Tigers have won!
This is the Jordy Hultberg Show. Get involved and call 337-706-0111. Follow along at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. And now it's time. Here's your host, Jordy Hultberg.
It's hour number two of two, and away we go on this Wednesday, November the 6th, the year 2019. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks so much for making us a part of it. Quote, they don't put championship rings on smooth fingers. That was the message Will Wade gave to his team as they get ready for another season, as they try to get another SEC championship. You've got to get your hands in the mud, get gritty, get grimy. You have to be able to do all the work that it's necessary to win. LSU gets their season opener underway this Friday against Bowling Green, 7 p.m. tip in the Pete Maravich Assembly Center. New team, not as big, no Cavell Bigby Williams, but they're great athleticism. They'll be a very up-tempo team, and Will promises me that they're going to be a much better shooting team than they were a year ago. They're going to have to be. They don't have that intimidating factor down low. And how good is Trendon Watford, the new incoming sensation? If he lives up to the billing, then look out. LSU should be very talented. I love the Bayou backcourt of Skylar Mays and Javonte Smart. I believe in guard play in college basketball. But much more on that as the days come. We'll get Will Wade on the program prior to the opening of another season, season number three for Will Wade. But without further ado, as we do each and every day, let's take our daily walk around the sports water cooler. Mr. Domain, if you don't mind, sir.
Here's today's Hot Topics, brought to you by Cajun Chef. Spice up your life with Cajun Chef products. Delectably delicious, decidedly better.
I just had to talk about basketball for a little bit. I don't know what else to say about this LSU-Alabama game. We've broken it down, X'd and O'd it, talked about the mental aspect. It's time to go play the dadgum game.
Exactly, Jordy. It's time to get ready to play the darn game. We got only a few more days left till we get to it. And, you know, obviously, I think the biggest thing everybody's been talking about today is the college football playoff rankings. LSU ranked second behind, of all teams, Ohio State, despite all the top 10 wins. My question to you, Jordy, is did the committee get it right this go-around, or is this just going to become the tradition where they kind of fudge things around to where we're just talking about it all day?
I think that's part of the plan. They want college football on the forefront. Every television station, every radio show, every sports newspaper, if they still exist, that's what they're talking about. They contradict themselves every year. This now seems to be the eyeball test year. And they're looking at LSU giving up 30-something points to Vanderbilt. And they're saying, well, Ohio State has the best defense with the best defensive player in the country in Chase Young. They've been the most consistent. And they've played a pretty good schedule. So, look, in the grand scheme of things, it really doesn't mean a hill of beans right here, right now. The one that matters is the last college football playoff rankings. You take care of your business now, you'll be there. If you don't, then you got to struggle. Then we'll see. But, hey, look, they're in the Final Four right now, but that doesn't mean anything. If they lose to Bama, they'll be out. If they win against Bama, they'll be number one. Plain and simple.
It means something to some people, especially when you just look at the history of how the college football playoff rankings have gone. Number two team that was in that initial rankings every year, Jordy, has won. And that's definitely saying something. And also, you look at number one, they never made the college football playoff, especially the first year. Mississippi State was that number one team and then did not make anything. They didn't make any running at all.
Yeah, you're right. Look, let's just let it play out, and we'll see where it all, when the dust settles, we'll see who's there. So big, big, big opportunity for a lot of teams. It's a big weekend in college football for a lot of teams. A lot of good games left to play. So let's just worry about the game ahead and let that committee sit in their little private hotel rooms and figure it all out. It doesn't matter right now. It just doesn't.
It's a big weekend for college football, period, Jordy, because you got, obviously, LSU, Alabama taking all the spotlight. Penn State, Minnesota is going to be something to keep an eye on, especially when it comes to these college football playoff rankings. But, of course, we talk about LSU being ranked second. I think the biggest surprise of it all was the fact Clemson picked fifth in these rankings. Defending national champs, Jordy, nowhere to be found. That, to them, to some people at least, that means if they don't wind up stepping their game up, they could be on the outside looking in if they lose one game.
They're not losing a game, and they're going to be in the playoff. I can promise you right here, right now. That was the wake-up call to Clemson. Look out, next team they play. Nobody's beating them till they get to the playoff. Trust me.
I'd love to see you, Jordy. It's going to be a lot of fun what's going to happen over the next month or so, just looking around the world of the college football. But I think some Saints fans can definitely have a lot of good news heading to that big game against the Atlanta Falcons this Sunday. Alvin Kamara, Jared Cook, they are back on the field. That's absolutely huge towards getting things ready for a big game. And you wind up saying these guys are probably going to wind up playing on Sunday. This seems to be fully loaded for the second half of the season.
Couldn't happen at a better time. The bye week couldn't have happened at a better time. They have proven all the doubters wrong. No quarterback, they still win. No running back, no tight end, they still win. They're all back together again. This defense is playing with supreme confidence. They're the most well-rounded team in the NFL. Now, can they close the deal? You would think after the past two seasons, the way they ended with the Minneapolis Miracle and the Nola no-call, that good fortune is on the side of the Saints. We can only hope that bad things don't happen in threes, because we've had enough of those. So this could be quite a year. LSU, the Saints, could be quite a year.
It really could be, Jordy. I cannot wait to see what happens with these teams down the line. I think more so with LSU, because, of course, you need to win this game this Saturday against Alabama to get to Atlanta. I think that's the first thing above all else, is getting that win this Saturday against Alabama. And who do you think is going to be your biggest key player to keep an eye on in that matchup for LSU?
Joe Burrow. Joe, I know ifs, ands, buts, maybes about it. If Joe Burrow plays like Joe Burrow has played, LSU wins the game. If Alabama, as Nick Saban says, affects him, gets him off his spot, makes him do something uncharacteristic like turn the ball over, Alabama's going to win. Always go with the best player in the biggest games. If the best player plays his best, they're going to win. Plain and simple. So, Joe, let's go, baby. Let's go.
I can't wait to see what's going to happen this Saturday. We'll talk about it again in not too distant future. But, Jordy, pretty slow day last night, so not much really kind of big headlines to kind of break down. So I'm out of ideas right now.
I saw this this newcomer for Kentucky named Maxie. John Calipari has a superstar on hand with him. So, look, high school football are coming down to the last regular season games. The playoffs will begin. We got a playoff type of game with the Tigers and the Tide and the Saints trying to keep things going. It's a great time. And basketball started. It's a great time to be a sports fan. CD, thank you so much. It's always a great time because we love food, and food is just better with Cajun Chef hot sauce on it. It's the best. No question. No doubt. Right there in St. Martinville, the Biard family for nearly 90 years, using the finest spices, using the finest peppers. They come up with the finest hot sauce. Yes, indeed. So if you go into the high school games, you go into Tuscaloosa, or you go into a friend's house to watch the game, bring a bottle of Cajun Chef hot sauce with you, because everything tastes better with Cajun Chef on it. Donald Trump says, I'm going to the game. I'm going to be neutral. And then he did ask, is your quarterback as good as they say he is? Dadgum right, as he was politically stumping in the state of Louisiana for the governor's race. Donald Trump, they're opening up the gates an hour earlier because of all the heightened security that comes with the POTUS at an event. Always security at the Superdome. Falcons are coming to town. Saints need to take care of business. We'll talk about that next with John Hendricks here on Acadiana's number one sports station, 103.7 The Game, 103.7thegame.com. This is the Jordy Helfrich Show.
Bring Acadiana Sports.
Welcome back after what we hope will be an unbelievable Saturday experience in Tuscaloosa for all LSU fans. The Saints get back in action after a bye week when the Atlanta Falcons come to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome for a 12 noon kickoff. The Saints own an 8-2 record following bye weeks over the last 10 years, and they've won their last six home games when returning from the bye. So Sean Payton and his staff doing all the right things. John Hendricks, who covers the Saints for Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles, among the many other activities that he's involved in, kind enough to join us. So you like the Saints at home against this is the classic throw the record out the window, right? Atlanta comes to town. They love nothing more than to spoil the Saints' season because their season's in the ditch. But a win over the Saints would make their year. So Saints better not overlook them.
Yeah, look, and I think a lot of that actually has to do with this matchup. Look, I think the Falcons, I don't know if they smell blood in the water, but, you know, look, again, regardless of record, and you look past the, you know, past 10 years in this matchup, even past 20 years, everybody circled this game on the calendar. And, you know, this is going to be a tough divisional fight, usually on your hands. You know, I mean, for the most part, these two have played each other really, really tight. I mean, there really hasn't been too many landslide victories in the Sean Payton era on either side. But, you know you're going to get a good matchup, and it's going to be broadcast to a lot of the states for the noon game. So a lot of eyes will be on this one to see if New Orleans can keep it up. And, you know, this is the meat and potatoes of their schedule with going four straight NFC South opponents in November.
John, the loss of Cam Newton for the season, does that hurt Carolina? Help Carolina? What do you surmise from that?
Well, look, I think it can hurt them a little bit. You know, I mean, Kyle Allen has been playing pretty well, I guess for the most part. But you know, I think my concern for that team is, you know, they're riding the Christian McCaffrey train pretty hard, and his workload is just I just don't know. When the season counts into the back half here, if he's going to still be at 100% or he's going to be out of the tank, and you know, then it's going to have to say, well, Kyle Allen's going to have to beat you through the air because everybody's going to focus in on McCaffrey. So, look, I obviously going to right. IR is not what Cam Newton expected this year, and a lot of us didn't either. But you know, again, they've been getting some of the job done, and you know, have had some struggles here a little bit recently. But you know, look, I think there's still a team that you got to watch out for and can creep up on you, and all they need is a good string, and they're going to have to get some fortune to fall their way to see the Saints, you know, kind of just flop out to get back in this division race.
This game Sunday, as we continue the conversation with John Hendricks, is like North Pole, South Pole. The Saints are 7-1. They've won their last six. The Falcons are 1-7. They've lost their last six. Kamara should be back. Jared Cook should be back. What should the Saints be concerned about? Is it the clutter, the noise? They're hearing a lot of good things about themselves as they took on their bye week and they went back home or wherever they go and whatever they did. They're getting a lot of pats on the back.
Yeah, look, I mean, you know, a lot of it's riding on it, right? You're saying, hey, this is the number one power-ranked team across the league right now, especially with the Patriots falling out. And, you know, I think a lot of us might be just waiting for one of those bad games to come up. But, you know, look, I think Sean Payton has been around this league long enough to understand what he has to do to motivate his team. you know, getting a healthy Kamara back is going to be amazing for boost for the offense, especially after you get Latavius Murray going, and then you can get Jared Cook back in the mix. That's a huge boost to this team, and it seems like they're getting healthier. And then, you know, having Drew Brees play in that Cardinals game was huge for him, too. So, look, I don't know if I expect them to fall on a landmine here or anything like that, especially playing at home, just because of what's at stake as far as proving people wrong. And I think that's something that they've been priding themselves on for a while, ever since, you know, the Minnesota Miracle and then, you know, last year's NFC Championship game. I think they just are out to prove, you know, we don't care about what anybody says. We're just going to go out there, put together football wins, and we'll see what happens.
November's been a good month for the Saints, particularly at home. Since 2009, Drew Brees and company are 17-7 at home. That's a 71% winning percentage. It's a 3-0 home mark against Atlanta during the month of November. The Saints take care of business this month, sets up a one-game matchup at home against San Francisco that could be for home field advantage throughout the playoffs.
Yeah, look, I think obviously that one's a lot more important than people realize. And look, I think, you know, San Francisco's got a really tough sled coming up. I mean, it starts with Seattle, and I know Seattle's kind of riding some highs, especially with them getting Josh Gordon. So, look, I don't know, and I think that's the team that's going to get humbled really soon, and whether it comes at the hands of the Saints or whoever else, you know, I think people are pretty high on that train right now, but as it looks, I mean, that division's coming down to Seattle and San Francisco, but I really wouldn't rule out Seattle coming up from, you know, the bottom and under them and sweeping the rug, if you will, so to speak. And yeah, I think that's somebody that could potentially surprise some people down the stretch here.
I'm with you. When you have Russell Wilson, you're not out of a game, and that's he's done it way, way too many times. Are the Saints getting healthier at wide receiver? We all know about Thomas and what he has done. It's been remarkable, but he needs some help. Besides Kamara coming out of the backfield, Cook has to become a little bit more consistent, and he's really seemed to be focused in on this last half of the season. Who are you thinking of as that other receiver that Drew Brees will have a lot of confidence in that can make plays?
Yeah, look, it's tough to say. I mean, I saw a lot of sneaky looks with Josh Hill, the guy that comes to mind offhand, you know, just especially if they run those two tight end sets. And, you know, it's going to free up Taysom Hill to do a little bit more, you know, with Drew Brees being back and everybody else kind of getting healthy. But, look, I think when you look at what Ted Ginn Jr. you have with him, I still think he's going to be heavily in the mix, but you know, you got to get Traquan Smith more involved. You got to figure out if he's going to be your answer, if he's rehabbed from that ankle injury, and you know, looking at a couple of videos and just what it looks like. Keith Kirkwood's on his way back sooner rather than later. So, look, I don't know if that's going to be enough here, if, you know, because, again, even with that wide receiving threat, you know, I don't think it leaps off the page and scares anybody, especially when you look at their postseason performance. So, look, I think there's still a lot to be figured out there. But, you know, one thing with Drew Brees, he makes a lot of people look good. And the biggest thing here is when your number's called, you got to catch the ball and make the play. So we know what we got with Michael Thomas and Alvin Kamara. So we got to see what happens with these other guys.
I guess if these teams can't stop Michael Thomas, just keep throwing him the damn ball. He catches everything until somebody takes him away. But nobody's done it yet.
Yeah, you know, it's crazy because I still see he's not getting the respect out there. And I mean, I know some people said, look, MVPs of the season and stuff, but you can't really have that conversation and not mention Michael Thomas. And, you know, all the stigma was, hey, he's only good because of Drew Brees, or the Saints could only win because of Drew Brees. But look, I mean, Michael Thomas just has taken it to another level. He's always played at such a competitive level. And, you know, nobody has been able to find out a way to take the Saints' best player on offense right now this season out of the game. And, you know, that's crucial for them, because even if you try to take him out, they're going to find another way to beat you. So, look, I think he should be in the MVP conversation. I think he's going to continue to have a really stellar back half of the season. And for him, it's just making sure he stays 100%.
Might be one of the best rivalries in the NFL, Saints and the Falcons. To me, you tell me, it's tantamount for the Saints to come out quickly, put points on the board, get in front of Atlanta. Atlanta may just say, oh, gosh, here we go again. We're 1-7. We're not going to make the playoffs. It's over. But if you let a team like that get a lead and feel good about themselves, you may have a dogfight on your hands.
Yeah, you certainly will. And look, you know, I think obviously the Falcons can move the ball. You know, Calvin Ridley, Julio Jones, we know the usual suspects there. You know, not having Mohamed Sanu kind of hurts them a little bit, obviously. But, you know, I think the biggest thing here is the pass protection. And you know, Matt Ryan has been under duress quite a lot this year, and I know they're going to want to try to get the ball out early and try to move the chains. Just build, you know, one drive at a time, take some success where they can. But, look, if I'm the Saints, they know what the Falcons are about. I mean, they've seen them so many times over the past decade, if you will, and more than that for some players. But, you know, you just got to take away what they are trying to accomplish. And, you know, that crowd's going to be huge. And you know, anybody that thinks that this Falcons crowd is going to – or Falcons are going to take the crowd out of this equation early is probably in for a rude awakening, because this Saints fan base is probably as jacked as ever.
John, I can't thank you enough for your time. Keep up the great work at Forbes Sports and Canal Street Chronicles, and we'll talk next week, buddy. Always a pleasure to talk with you, man. And real quick, who you got, LSU or Bama? Real quick.
I got to take LSU. I just feel like Joe Burrow is the real deal. This is finally the year that we can celebrate an LSU victory.
I hear you. You're welcome back next week on that one. John, thank you, man. You take care. Right. That brought to you in part by ShopRite Tobacco Plus Discount Outlets, 60 of them in southern and central Louisiana. If you can't shop right at ShopRite, man, you just can't shop right at all. You just can't. Listen, we've got much more to come. Michael Huguenin of The Athletic will break down the big games and then the biggest game next.
Uh-oh, guess what day it is? Guess what day it is?
It's time to break down the biggest storylines in college football this week with Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. What's up, Michael?
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day!
Hump day's getting better and better. Week 11 of the college football season, some huge games, and the first college football playoff ranking of the season has come out. Ohio State debuting at number 1, LSU 2, Alabama 3, Penn State 4, and defending national champion Clemson on the outside looking in. Michael, good afternoon. I know it doesn't mean anything right here, right now, but before we get into the games coming up, well, your initial thoughts on the college football playoff ranking?
Yeah, I thought they were fine. Obviously, this weekend is going to reshape it greatly. So, this is week 11. Still 5 weeks left, so there's a lot that's going to happen. But this is obviously a gigantic week.
Should Baylor be upset at 8-0? They're behind two lost SEC teams, or is it because they haven't played anybody?
They haven't played anybody. And the same thing with Minnesota. It's you're unbeaten. Okay, that's good. But let's take a little closer look at how you got to that unbeaten record. And, you know, Alabama hasn't played anybody either. At least Alabama, though, has looked vastly better. And Rob Mullins, the selection committee chairman, made a point of talking about the eye test. And eye test on Baylor and Minnesota, you guys are unbeaten, but you haven't truly impressed anybody.
So I guess the eye test is what sold them on Ohio State over, say, an LSU whose resume is a lot better than what we've seen so far from the Buckeyes.
And Ohio State actually, though, you go by strength of schedule, top to bottom of the schedule, Ohio State has played the toughest schedule of the teams that are unbeaten.
Oh, okay.
They've blown out everybody, and I think that's the difference. I think you look at LSU, certainly an impressive win against Auburn, certainly an impressive win against Florida. Gave up 38 points to Vandy. And again, if LSU wins Saturday, they'll be number one next week. I don't have any doubt about that. So I think the idea that people are a little bit perturbed at Baylor, at Minnesota, at Alabama, at LSU, at Clemson, it's week one. And it's things, if you keep doing what what you expect to do, you're going to be fine. So.
All right. Michael Hugin of The Athletic. Let's get busy. But before the mayhem that's going to be taking place in Tuscaloosa Saturday, there's another game that's almost as big. At number 17-ranked Minnesota, the Golden Gophers will be front and center on the national stage. The surprisingly undefeated Gophers are hosting number 4 Penn State, also undefeated, just so happens to be one of the most dominant teams in the nation. Can the Gophers keep their dream alive at home?
No, I would be shocked. You look at Minnesota, and they are an extremely good story. And, you know, they're a lesser light that's playing well. They were a powerhouse in the 30s and 40s. That's a long time ago. Opened the season, barely beaten South Dakota State. Game two, they were lucky to beat Fresno. Game three, they struggled to beat Georgia Southern. Game four, they struggled to beat Purdue. So the last 2 weeks they've been dominant, outscoring their opponents 94-17. Those opponents are Rutgers and Maryland. Baton Rouge Catholic can beat those teams. So it's not that big. I mean, Minnesota's winning unbeaten record is it's a nice story, but I think they lose by two touchdowns on Saturday, though it will be nice. If you're a fan of the downtrodden, to watch and see what Minnesota does and to watch what happens when a team like that goes unbeaten and gins up the fans. There's going to be a crowded, packed stadium, and that never happens in Minnesota. So it's a nice story that's going to come to an end Saturday afternoon.
He is Michael Hugin of The Athletic, another team that really nobody could have predicted that would be unbeaten is the Baylor Bears. Matt Rhule's done a wonderful job. They've had some scares. They nearly lost in overtime to Texas Tech, bailed out by an awful call. West Virginia came really close to pulling off the upset just last weekend. Now the Bears are on the road against a TCU team that's, man, they've kind of fallen off the face of the earth of late. Baylor, do they remain undefeated?
I actually think they do. TCU, you're right. TCU is not very good right now. And I don't know if that means Gary Patterson's shelf life is over at TCU because, you know, you and I have talked over the years about how certain coaches, they're like bread. If they're on the shelf too long, they get stale. And you wonder if that's the case at TCU.
Yeah.
You're right. Baylor was unimpressive in beating Rice. I mean, Rice is horrendous. So, again, you give Baylor and you give Minnesota credit for, hey, the game is there for the taking. Do you take it? And those teams have done so, and that's why they're unbeaten. But I don't think Baylor's that good, but I think they're better than TCU. But you're right, the fact that they barely beat West Virginia, they barely beat Iowa State, they barely beat Rice, they barely beat Texas Tech. Baylor is imminently beatable. I just don't know if TCU can do it. I think one reason that Baylor's unbeaten is the Big 12 is not good this year.
All right. Michael Hugin of The Athletic. Let's shift over to a team that at one point in time was a big win for LSU, but it looks like the Longhorns have taken a step back after going 10-4 with Tom Herman in his first season. The Longhorns are 5-3 overall heading into Saturday's game against 16th-ranked Kansas State. This one's at home in Austin. Man, if Texas loses this one, boy, the shining light on Tom Herman is going to get dimmer and dimmer. So what do you think, Longhorns against Kansas State?
Yeah, I think that Texas and Washington are in the same boat. They were both overrated going into the season. They lost so much talent defensively, and everyone just assumed, you know, Todd Orlando has a good rep. Jimmy Lake has a good rep as the coordinator at Washington. Oh, they're going to be fine on defense. They're going to be well coached. Well, it's one thing to be – I don't think Todd Orlando or Jimmy Lake is a bad coach. It's just young talent makes tons of mistakes. And generally, upper-class talent doesn't make the same kind of mistakes. Plus, Texas has suffered a ton of injuries in the secondary. Their pass defense is horrible. Kansas State can't throw the ball. Kansas State prides itself on physicality. It prides itself on running the ball. It prides itself on playing really good defense. But you're right. K-State's ranked, and on paper, you're like, hey, this is a good chance for K-State to win this game. Mm-hmm. I still think Texas is better. Ellinger needs to avoid mistakes. But, you know, K-State showed against Oklahoma. If you give them an opportunity, they'll run through that open door and then make you push them out of the room they're in. And Oklahoma couldn't do it because Oklahoma got off to a really, really slow start, played abysmal football in the second quarter. Texas being at home, maybe that's the impetus for the Longhorns to play a good game, but you're right. If they lose this game, ooh, you're going to have the wolves howling, saying Tom Herman is overpaid and overrated.
Michael Hugan, The Athletic, moving on. Four games left to play until the Big Ten championship game. Number 18, Iowa. Number 13, Wisconsin. Both still alive to represent the Western Division with 3-2 records in the conference entering this weekend. It just so happens that they play one another in Madison on Saturday. One more loss would be a death knell for their hopes for contending for the conference title. Big one in the Big Ten.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, everybody's focusing on what Minnesota has this week. Well, Minnesota still has to play Iowa and Wisconsin, so the winner of this week's game between the Badgers and Hawkeyes is in good shape to win the division. So, because I think Wisconsin and Iowa are both better than Minnesota. But you're right, so this is sort of a loser-leave-town kind of game. You know, these teams are two of the unsexiest teams in college football.
Yes.
They want to be more physical than their opponent. They want to run the ball down the opponent's throat. They want to be able to use play action. When they get off track, boy, they are both inept offensively. So this one is a 1970s throwback kind of game. Whoever runs the best is going to win the game. And, you know, who's the bigger man? Is it the Iowa front four on defense or the Wisconsin front four on defense? Iowa would seem to have the advantage with Jonathan Taylor. Plus, I think Wisconsin's better. But this is, like you said, a loser-leave-town game. The winner probably still has extremely faint hopes of coming to Florida for a bowl game. More likely, though, to have to go somewhere where a Big Ten team doesn't want to go.
All right, we'll see. Two Saturdays ago, Kansas State, we talked about them a little bit earlier, stunned the college football world with that 48-41 upset over the Sooners. The Sooners had a bye week. What a miserable way to spend a bye week. Now they have a chance to redeem themselves, stay alive in the chance in the race for the college football playoff. Up next is a home game Saturday against an Iowa State team that is well-coached and won't go down without a fight. What do you see?
No, and Oklahoma needs to look good in winning the game. Not only do they have to win, they have to look good for the rest of the season. They are behind both Oregon and Utah, who are both really good defensive teams. Oklahoma has improved defensively, but still is not on Utah or Oregon's level defensively. Oklahoma has a gigantic problem forcing takeaways. They don't get any. And that's Alex Grinch, their new defensive coordinator. That's what he preaches. Takeaways, turnovers. We got to get them. We got to get them, and they're not getting any. My presumption is Oklahoma plays really well on Saturday. Jalen Hurts is taking some criticism for running the ball too much. Oklahoma has a lot of option plays, has a lot of read option plays, as well as simple run option plays. And Jalen Hurts is the team leader in rushing attempts.
Okay.
That's not the way it should be.
No.
They have two really good running backs, two NFL-level running backs, And my presumption is during the off week, even though Lincoln Riley says everything's fine, he is going to make sure that the tailbacks run the ball more, and that's bad news for Iowa State because I think Oklahoma is truly going to get its running game on track and beat Iowa State by at least two, maybe even three touchdowns.
Mike Hugan of The Athletic, we're talking about week 11 of the college football season, brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, the best trucks in the business. We saw Georgia with a big, big win over Florida. Jake Fromm looked terrific. Their defense was stout. Maybe we buried Georgia prematurely, but Georgia has been anything but consistent. Fromm had two bad outings against South Carolina and Kentucky before last weekend's really, really good performance. Can Missouri rock the boat in Athens?
No, I don't think so. Kelly Bryant's on 100%, and Missouri's run defense has gone south. The last two games, they've been shredded by Vandy and Kentucky. And Kentucky, that was with Lynn Bowden, with zero passing threat. Kentucky ran for 300 yards on him and four touchdowns. Yeah. And Lynn Bowden did a ton of damage. So if I'm DeAndre Swift, I'm looking forward to this game. And you're right, Florida's problem last week, I think they tried so hard, we're not letting DeAndre Swift run over us. And DeAndre Swift had a good game, not a great game, but Fromm was exceptionally sharp and torched Florida secondary. This week, I think it's going to be a more of a case of Georgia's going to do what it does best, run DeAndre Swift, and I think they're going to pound Missouri. Missouri's been a disappointing team. They've lost two in a row to Vandy and Kentucky. They've played three road games this year. They've lost all three. They're on the road this week, which I think bodes ill for them.
Okay, not good for the Missouri Tigers. Oh, by the way, Florida State got rid of their coach, Willie Taggart. They're going to pay him $17, $18 million to get away, to just leave us alone. What amazing, amazing. What? You're from the state of Florida. Florida State to be the best of the best, and, man, it's not the same. What's the issue at Florida State, and how good of a job is that?
Oh, I think it's still a really good job. I think there's two issues with Florida State. The roster's not nearly as good as it should be or as people think it is. People look at recruiting rankings and go, my God, what is going on down there? Taggart and his staff must be inept. Their offensive line is atrocious. It is the worst power offensive line in the nation for the second year in a row. And that's a direct reflection of Jimbo Fisher's horrible, horrible recruiting in terms of class balance. FSU's got like 15 DBs on scholarship. Mm. Maybe instead of recruiting eight DBs a year, you sign some offensive linemen. There was one year where Fisher and his staff, 2017, they signed one offensive lineman. One. That's insanity. And the quarterback situation is a joke. At the same time, Taggart and his FSU made the exact same mistakes in game one under Taggart that they made in game 21 under Taggart, and that's why Taggart's gone.
Mm-hmm. All right. Am I forgetting something? There's some game in Tuscaloosa.
Well, that's a big one, yes.
No, I think there's a game in Tuscaloosa. Let's get to it. You've talked about it before. LSU comes in, they've got great quarterback, great wide receiver, so does Bama. What's the health of Tua? What are your thoughts on the game?
It is. It comes down to the health of Tua. I think the game being played in Tuscaloosa obviously is a big advantage for Alabama. This game we're in Baton Rouge, big advantage for LSU, and I'd have no qualms picking LSU to win. If Tua is 90-95%, I think Alabama wins because they're playing at home. I think both teams are going to have a lot of success throwing the ball. It's amazing how the pendulum has swung in this game. It used to be, who's the bigger man? If we stop their running game, we got a great chance of winning. This year, we got no chance of stopping either team's passing attack. They are going to throw the ball on us, and they're going to have success. The key is, it's weird. The key is getting three or four stops.
Yeah.
And that's that's never been the case in this game, and that's why Tua's health is gigantic. If LSU can pressure him, get him off his spot, they're in great shape. I don't know if they can do that. Just like I don't know if Alabama can get Joe Burrow off his spot. And in a weird way, maybe the team that runs better does win, because, again, I don't think either team's going to have any problems throwing the ball on the opponent. I think Burrow's going to have a big day. I think Tua's going to have a big day. And maybe it comes down to, hey, Clyde Edwards-Helaire, if he can bust off a couple big runs, or if Najee Harris can bust off a couple of big runs, maybe that's enough. But I think the defenses are going to be under siege in this game and getting three or four stops, forcing punts, getting a turnover. It's going to be gigantic. But I think the home field, assuming Tua is healthy enough, I think the home field carries Alabama to the win.
I think maybe it's how do you handle red zone defense? Can you limit every once in a while to a field goal rather than a touchdown? Yeah. Maybe the difference.
So I don't think either team is too comfortable kicking field goals either. But you're right. Yeah. I mean, in this game, you want your defense to force 12 play drives. Thing is, though, with the explosiveness at receiver on both sides of the ball, I mean, there's a lot of NFL talent at wide receiver in this game. And unlike maybe 8 years ago where both teams had guys who'd play in the NFL, those NFL-level receivers are going to have the ball in their hands making plays. So, you know, does Jamar Jefferson catch 8 passes for 163 yards, or does Alabama hold him to 5 catches for 90? Does Devontae Smith have a fluke touchdown catch? What do they do against Henry Ruggs? How do they keep Jerry Jeudy under wraps? So the corners in this game and the safeties in this game are going to be exceedingly stressed. It's going to be an offensive showcase, and for LSU Alabama, that's mind-boggling to say.
Does this game get in the 40s, or do you think somewhere in the 30s wins it?
I think it's going to be high 30s. And I also will say this. I think LSU can afford a loss more than Alabama. LSU has played a much better schedule than Alabama. Let's just say Alabama loses this game. Okay, they ain't winning the division. They have one game left to make an impression. That's Auburn. Auburn potentially could lose 4 or 5 games. How big a deal is Alabama's win over Auburn going to be if Alabama's sitting there with one loss? Whereas if LSU has one loss, if I'm an LSU fan, I'm a huge Gator fan the rest of the way, and I'm a huge Texas fan the rest of the way.
Yep. We shall see. 2:30 Central, 3:30 Eastern, LSU, Game of the Century, Part 2 against Alabama. Game of the year. Michael Huguenin, enjoy the weekend. Thank you as always. We'll recap it next week.
Excellent. Thanks, man.
All right, there you go. Brought to you by Peterbilt of Louisiana, Baton Rouge, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and New Orleans. Tigers travel their equipment. They leave tomorrow, Thursday, and they'll get that equipment there with a Peterbilt truck, the best of the best. Back to wrap it up next. All right, we welcome you back, finishing touches to this Wednesday edition of the Jordy Helfrich Show. Special thanks to Joe Cashin, the play-by-play voice of the Coastal Carolina Chanticleers, one of the best nicknames in all of college sports. Chris Truax in the trenches, John Hendricks on the Saints versus the Falcons, and nobody better at breaking it down on the collegiate football scene than Michael Huguenin of The Athletic. Yes, indeed. Brought to you by D.C.'s Little Capital Exxon, I-10 at the Henderson Cecilia exit in Brobridge. Everything for your travel needs and the cleanest restrooms and that true soul food deli tucked away in the corner with the best, best cheeseburger ever. Nothing of significance happened on this day in sports history. Really kind of a slow day. So straight to birthday wishes. Happy 40th birthday to Lamar Odom. Happy 49th birthday to Ethan Hawke. And happy 73rd to Sally Field. CD, thank you for all you do. Thanks to all of you for listening and our partners for making it possible. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, 2 to 4, same great station, 103.7 The Game. Until then, I'm Jordy Helfrich. Stay thirsty, my friends. Stay thirsty.